Unit 4. Zooming up the information superhighway. Warming up. Now you will listen to an announcement. Listen carefully and then put the listed items into the proper category according to what you hear.
Ladies and gentlemen, the planning committee for the 5th Annual Communications Technology Fair welcomes you.
We hope you will find much to interest and inform you, and that you will also enjoy yourselves.
First, let me introduce some of the products and companies that we think will be of particular interest to you.
In the area of media technology, the electronic newspaper is set to change our lives.
The Xerox's Palo Alto Research Center has a remarkable new product which their representatives are keen to talk about later this morning. The world of entertainment has benefited by the presence in the marketplace of Verizon, a company that is bringing together the internet and television. Also, we have available teams of people from Amazon who can show you how to use their PayPal, a web payment processing service. The internet has many new innovations and opportunities to offer all of us. We hope this fair will help you to explore the benefits to your life and business of the many technological advances that we have on show.
Listening, understanding short conversations. Now you will hear 10 short conversations. A question will follow each conversation. Listen carefully and choose the best answer from the 4 possible choices.
1.
There is the question as to whether Vietnam should push developments in telecommunications at the expense of programs that would feed poor people.
I've heard the criticism, but I think moving ahead with technology is the right way to go. Surely modernizing will improve standards of living for everyone.
Question: what are the speakers talking about?
Two.
The internet has changed the world, Asia most of all, where cities that were once remote and cut off from the world are now online.
Yes, I agree. Have you been to Asia to see any of the changes? It really is quite remarkable. I was in Sichuan last month.
Question: what are the speakers talking about?
Three.
Marty says that our store should get online, but I'm not so sure.
A year ago, I would have said no. Our business just seems so small, but not anymore. More and more small stores are posting pages on the net, so I think we should as well.
Question: what do we know from the conversation?
Four.
Some people had doubts about our webpage, but I really think it's brought in a lot of new customers.
I agree completely. Business has boomed since we started the website.
Question: what can be inferred from the conversation?
Five.
Hold up on that last prescription. According to the patient's computer file, he has allergies.
You're kidding. Good thing you looked up his file. He'd have had a bad reaction if we'd given him that medicine.
Question: why did the speakers not give the medicine to the patient?
Six.
I've just got off the phone with the credit bureau. Seems they had a problem with their computer files.
Yeah, I had a similar problem. Luckily, I was able to sort it before they blacklisted me for good.
Question: what might have caused serious damage for the man?
Seven.
The job center is offering classes on using computer technology. You interested?
It'd probably be a good idea. I've been asked about my computer skills at all the job interviews I've had. If I could learn some better skills, maybe I'd finally find a job.
Question: what can be inferred from the conversation?
8.
I'm kind of worried about how technology is used these days. If governments are tracking us with computers, well, isn't that something we should worry about?
Nah, I mean, well, I suppose you might worry if you're doing something bad.
Question, what does the man think?
Nine.
We've had 5 new computers installed in our classroom, but I don't think our teacher knows what to do with them.
Really? Maybe I should come to see your teacher and see if I can help in any way. Would it be embarrassing for you if I did?
Question. What is the relationship between the speakers?
Ten.
Will our library books do nothing but collect dust now that the internet gives all computer users access to so much data?
Could be. Maybe over the next 15 years, all the books you see here will be thrown out to make room for more computers.
Question. Where is this conversation taking place?
Understanding a long conversation. Now you will hear a long conversation followed by 5 questions. Listen carefully and choose the best answer from the 4 possible choices.
So, what do you think? Should Vietnam invest heavily in communications technology? Vietnam, the country.
I know about the country. I learned about it in school, but I don't have the foggiest notion of what you're talking about.
The Vietnamese government is putting a lot of money into communications technology. You know, the internet, mobile phone lines, and the like.
Okay, so what's the problem?
It's a really poor country. Most people there don't have as much as our family, and many people outside of the country are saying the government should do more to help poor people. I, for one, find the government's actions unbelievable.
So what?
So, do you have any ideas? I'd like to know what you think.
I think that the Vietnamese government is independent of outside influence and can do what it likes.
The question isn't if it can or can't do it. The question is what it should do.
I don't know, man. I guess, well, I have a new computer, a mobile phone, the internet, a mess of other technology, and I like these things. The Vietnamese might like them too, and maybe make good use out of them.
Questions 1 to 5 are based on the conversation you have just heard. 1. What are the speakers talking about? 2. What is the problem? 3. What can be inferred from the conversation about the man? 4. How does the woman feel about technology? 5. What is the probable relationship between the speakers? 5. Understanding a passage. Now you will hear a passage followed by 5 questions. Listen carefully and choose the best answer from the 4 possible choices. The information highway, the information superhighway, the interweb, the internet, all of these words have come to identify the same thing, the widespread connection of computers and information from around the world. And as our understanding of this connection has changed, so too have the terms we've used to describe it. The information highway was a term used especially in the 1990s to describe the Internet. The official project was dubbed the National Information Infrastructure and went beyond the interconnectivity of just computers. the scope broadened to include all types of data transmissions between a plethora of places, people, and devices. It is often associated with the United States politician and former Vice President Al Gore, who promoted funding for programs that led to aspects of the development of the Internet. Although its currency was wider than merely Gore, many policy organizations made pronouncements about the so-called information highway or the variant information superhighway. Both terms are used less frequently now that for many people the Internet has become a less abstract and more concrete thing. The highway analogy, though useful and apt, has perhaps served its purpose.
Questions 1 to 5 are based on the passage you have just heard. 1. What is the passage about? 2. What was the official name of the Intranet project? 3. What was Al Gore's role in starting the Intranet? 4. What can we know from the passage? 5. What does the speaker have to say about the term information highway?
6. Understanding a radio program. Task 1. Now listen to a recording and match the sentence fragments that follow. The first one has been done for you.
Bill Gates has made many contributions throughout the last 25 or 30 years, most of all, of course, the Windows operating system, which more than 90% of all computers in the world use today. He was a very shrewd business person at an early age, almost as a teenager, in fact, and he was one of the few people who could see a hobbyist market, that is a bunch of nerds sort of playing with computers and chips in their basements, and how that could become a potential business. One of the interesting things that Microsoft and under Bill Gates' leadership was able to do is, in fact, take on some of the biggest computer companies, basically IBM, at a very early stage when IBM wasn't quite sure if the microcomputer was a toy or a potential business tool. And Gates had faith that it was a business tool. He could see ahead. He's always been a fairly strategic thinker. And that, in turn, led him, in fact, dominate the computer industry that IBM would still like to be able to do. Will Microsoft innovate? That's a question that I usually answer by saying I'm a historian, so I live in the past, and there are lots of people who are sort of more expert in predicting the future, so I think I'll just leave it at that.
Speaking.
Model dialogues.
Definiteness and percentage.
1.
Doctor, please tell me the truth. What are my chances of recovery?
100%.
Really? Are you sure?
Absolutely.
2.
What's the percentage of overseas markets in proportion to domestic markets for your products?
The ratio is about 7 overseas to 3 domestic.
And what's the total amount of your annual sales?
For fiscal year 2004, it was a little over $3 billion. Increase and decrease.
1.
The economic news doesn't look good, does it?
Not according to the newspaper yesterday. Costs seem to be rising in so many categories that it appears to defeat any efforts at stabilization.
That's my feeling, too. Raw material now costs more. Labor is demanding higher wages and production costs continue to soar.
There may be some relief this summer. I guess the price of some food will decrease.
2.
What happened to the e-market mall?
A big decrease in sales caused the store to close.
Oh, that's bad. Will it open again?
It all depends. Speaking practice, IT and the loss of personal privacy. Now listen to a passage and give a speech in response to the questions asked. Your speech should be no shorter than 20 sentences. Write out your speech before delivering it in front of your classmates.
Information technology has opened up the world, allowing people to find out more about almost everything right away. At any given minute, you can find information about nearly anything you want. However, it's also possible for people to find information about you as well. One of the most widespread uses of information technology is in the saving and managing of personal information. In the modern workplace, records about employees are saved in company databases. Records exist elsewhere that keep track of your health issues, criminal records, and the products we buy. Even the names of books checked out at the library are recorded on the computer. In the old days, records like this would have been difficult to keep. When they were kept, they were difficult to access. This meant that a lot of personal information about people remained secret. Nowadays, secrets are nearly impossible to keep. Right now, someone could be learning everything about you.
Listening and speaking.
Task 1. Fill in the following table according to what you hear. Fact. The Internet is a tool that has many benefits. People are able to communicate around the world for almost no cost. Such communication would be very expensive by other methods. Fact. The Internet provides a lot of information. The knowledge of the world is literally at our fingertips every time we turn on our computers. Yet, some of this information can be dangerous. So why do I hate the Internet? First of all, the Internet is addictive. Once I get on the Internet, it's hard for me to get off it. I can spend all day on the computer without thinking what time it is. Secondly, I am concerned that everyone in the world who has access to the Internet can learn how to build a bomb or buy a gun. Thirdly, some of the information on the Internet isn't accurate. Many people post information on websites, but they are often just rubbish or advertising products or services. Searching for reliable information can take a lot of time. Homework. Language Sense Enhancement. Task 1. Listen to the following recording and imitate the speaker. What's our focus here? Well, it's about new software opportunities, websites, and applications, which we've often thought of as two different things, are actually adopting the best practices of each other and being able to move to whole new levels. The responsiveness of the experience, the ability to connect to the rich graphical capabilities of the device, connecting up to the information that the users care about. We've got quite a variety of people here, which really reflect the skill sets that need to be brought to bear to make these customer experiences as great as they can be. A lot of developers, a lot of designers, which is fantastic because we have very specific things we're doing for that group. And then, of course, people who are deciding about what to invest and seeing where the web is going, understanding what those opportunities look like. In terms of size, you've got people doing the very biggest consumer websites all the way down to people doing smaller sized, and people who are design shops that help literally thousands of customers get in and use rich templates to have very competitive experiences. Supplementary Listening. Task 1. Now you will hear a long conversation followed by 5 questions. Listen carefully and choose the best answer from the 4 possible choices.
Have a seat, Mr. Johnson. Now, what's the problem?
Well, as I told you on the phone, I'm having a bit of trouble with my landlord.
Yes, what sort of trouble?
Well, when I moved in 6 months ago, he said he was going to fix up 2 or 3 things that needed doing.
What sort of things exactly?
Well, there was no ventilation in the kitchen, and the hot water system wasn't working properly.
And he said he'd have them attended to?
Yes, that's right. He agreed to have them done. But now 6 months have gone by and still nothing has been done.
So he's broken his promise.
Yes, and not only that, now that the lease has run out, he wants to increase the rent by $10 a week.
Well, he can't do that without your agreement, you know.
Yes, I know that, but the trouble is he can evict me if I don't agree.
Yes, that's true, he can. However, eviction is easier said than done.
You mean it could be difficult for him?
Yes, he can't just throw you out on the street. He has to give you reasonable notice, usually a month.
Questions 1 to 5 are based on the conversation you have just heard. 1. What are the speakers talking about? 2. How long has the man lived in his current home? 3. What can be inferred from the conversation? 4. What does the landlord need permission for? 5. What must a landlord do before sending a person out of his home? 2. Now you will hear a passage followed by 5 questions. Listen carefully and choose the best answer from the 4 possible choices.
People who want to find love on the internet often do so because they want people to know them for who they really are, rather than what they look like. These people believe that it is the inside of a person, that is, the intellect and the heart of a person, that should be the deciding factor in love. The outside shouldn't matter. This belief can be found in the famous story of Beauty and the Beast. Beauty and the Beast is a German fairy tale about a beautiful and gentle young woman who is taken to live with a man-beast in return for the beast sparing her father's life when he accidentally insults him. Beauty is kind to the well-mannered beast, but pines for her family until the beast allows her to visit them. Once home, Beauty delays her return until she hears that the beast is dying without her. She returns to the beast and restores him to health. When she agrees to marry the beast, the evil spell upon him is broken, and he becomes a handsome prince. Beauty and her prince live happily ever after.
Questions 1 to 5 are based on the passage you have just heard. 1. What is the passage about? 2. How do people on the internet want to be seen? 3. Which word best describes the woman in the story? 4. What can be inferred from the story? 5. What can we know from the story? 3. Now you will hear a passage 3 times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 1 to 7 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 8 to 10, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard, or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage. A new era is upon us. Call it what you will, the service economy, the information age, or the knowledge society. It all translates to a fundamental change in the way we work. Already we're partly there. The percentage of people who earn their living by making things has fallen dramatically in the Western world. Today, the majority of jobs in America, Europe, and Japan are in the service industry, and that number is on the rise. More women are in the workplace than ever before. There are more part-time jobs. More people are self-employed. But the breadth of the economic transformation can't be measured by numbers alone, because it is also giving rise to a radical new way of thinking about the nature of work itself. Long-held notions about jobs and careers, the skills needed to succeed, even the relationship between individuals and employers, all of these are being challenged. We only have to look behind us to get some sense of what is ahead. No one looking ahead 20 years could possibly have foreseen the ways in which a single invention, the chip, would transform our world thanks to its applications in personal computers, digital communications, and factory robots. Tomorrow's achievements in biotechnology, artificial intelligence, or even some still unimagined technology could produce a similar wave of dramatic changes. But one thing is certain, information and knowledge will become even more vital, and the people who possess it, whether they work in manufacturing or services, will have the greatest advantage and produce the most wealth. Computer knowledge will become as basic a requirement as the ability to read and write. Now the passage will be read again. A new era is upon us. Call it what you will, the service economy, the information age, or the knowledge society. It all translates to a fundamental change in the way we work. Already we're partly there. The percentage of people who earn their living by making things has fallen dramatically in the Western world. Today, the majority of jobs in America, Europe, and Japan are in the service industry, and that number is on the rise. More women are in the workplace than ever before. There are more part-time jobs. More people are self-employed. But the breadth of the economic transformation can't be measured by numbers alone, because it is also giving rise to a radical new way of thinking about the nature of work itself. Long-held notions about jobs and careers, the skills needed to succeed, even the relationship between individuals and employers, all of these are being challenged. We only have to look behind us to get some sense of what is ahead. No one looking ahead 20 years could possibly have foreseen the ways in which a single invention, the chip, would transform our world thanks to its applications in personal computers, digital communications, and factory robots. Tomorrow's achievements in biotechnology, artificial intelligence, or even some still unimagined technology could produce a similar wave of dramatic changes. But one thing is certain, information and knowledge will become even more vital, and the people who possess it, whether they work in manufacturing or services, will have the greatest advantage and produce the most wealth. Computer knowledge will become as basic a requirement as the ability to read and write. Now the passage will be read for the third time. A new era is upon us. Call it what you will, the service economy, the information age, or the knowledge society. It all translates to a fundamental change in the way we work. Already we're partly there. The percentage of people who earn their living by making things has fallen dramatically in the Western world. Today, the majority of jobs in America, Europe, and Japan are in the service industry, and that number is on the rise. More women are in the workplace than ever before. There are more part-time jobs, more people are self-employed, but the breadth of the economic transformation can't be measured by numbers alone, because it is also giving rise to a radical new way of thinking about the nature of work itself. Long-held notions about jobs and careers, the skills needed to succeed, even the relationship between individuals and employers, all of these are being challenged. We only have to look behind us to get some sense of what is ahead. No one looking ahead 20 years could possibly have foreseen the ways in which a single invention, the chip, would transform our world thanks to its applications in personal computers, digital communications, and factory robots. Tomorrow's achievements in biotechnology, artificial intelligence, or even some still unimagined technology could produce a similar wave of dramatic changes. But one thing is certain, information and knowledge will become even more vital, and the people who possess it, whether they work in manufacturing or services, will have the greatest advantage and produce the most wealth. Computer knowledge will become as basic a requirement as the ability to read and write.